welcome to another episode of the Monday Mile Podcast. Today, we're heading out for a woodland stroll in Oxfordshire with a gentleman who's a businessman and the host of the incredibly successful podcast, Spooning. He's changed his life by following a spiritual path. He fasts, he ice baths, he meditates, and he hits 7% body fat just in time for his 50th birthday. Yet, in the words of Claudia Winkleman, he owns one of the best pizza spots in the world. Question is, Mark, how do you balance it all?
Well, I mean, you know, there is the adage, don't get high on your own supply. Right? But I do have to eat pizza about 3-4 times a week.
That must be a tough task.
Not really. It's good pizza. I mean, you know, as we say, if you work for us, you're home slice for life.
Nice. I've been into Home Slice once, and I can confirm the pizza was elite, but I think I'm going to have to go and frequent it more so, well, potentially after this conversation.
Well, the good thing is now I can always get you a table.
Boom. We're in. The podcast exchange is real. How are you?
I'm good. I mean, you know, it's a lovely day for a change. We're in a lovely place. We're just near my house. I feel very blessed and lucky to live somewhere like this, with this on my doorstep. It's just the peace. I think as you get older, you just want a bit of peace. And I can come out and find that here whenever I want.
The serenity is real. I instantly feel slightly more relaxed.
But just stop. Look. Nothing. And we're like 5 minutes drive from Henley here. It's incredible.
Delightful. Are you much of a walker?
I go through fits and starts with walking. When I went for that sort of fit as F at 50 transformation that I decided to do, part of the regime was a minimum of 10,000 steps a day. Being quite an extreme person, I like to try and do double that a day. You know, I feel to a certain degree I've failed if I'm sub 8,000 steps a day.
Yeah.
So I like to be 10 or above.
So would you count your steps? Have you got a tracking device? Is that
I've got this thing which measures all sorts of stuff, which is the Whoop. I am a Whoopist.
You're a Whoopist.
Sorry, it's a bit muggy through this bit.
That's okay. I'm glad I've got my older trainers on.
Older trainers, but still box fresh compared to you. You haven't got your proper sort of walking boots on.
We don't own walking boots living in London.
Okay. But, yeah, so, I mean, the thing is, I find I've got to keep mobile. Find that at my age now, if I have a couple of sedentary weeks, I start to feel very different physically. Just it all starts to just, I start to walk a bit gnarled. And naturally, I've got crap posture anyway. So I have to consciously sort of stand up.
A bit of the standing tall? Core in, long neck, shoulders back and down. I reckon we could perfect the walk and the posture throughout this stroll.
Well, what's interesting is a physio I saw, he said just walk as if you're following your belt buckle around, like you're being pulled by your belt buckle.
Oh, that's more of gut forward, no?
Well, no, if you imagine, my tendency is to do that. But if I do that, if I imagine that I'm being pulled by that central point, you tuck your bum in and you start using your glutes more when you're walking.
Who knew this was going to be a posture walking lesson with Mark Wogan?
As you get older, it's all about your bum.
Yeah, I've got good glutes, to be fair, from snowboarding.
You'd hope, given the fact that you were an international athlete, that your glutes would be in good shape.
I've still got them 13 years later. Oh, no, not 13. Retired that long. 10.
But having been in a constant state of movement for most of your life as a professional athlete, to then kind of stop must be horrible. You see it with footballers, don't you? These guys who have been in, you know, peak physical condition, they then stop playing, or boxers as well.
Yeah, they grow sideways opposed to upright.
They become what would be politely known as overnourished, which, you know, I can say because I have previously been deeply overnourished.
So on that, would you say, as someone having grown up around food,
yeah,
used to be a chef,
yeah, I'm fine now. pretty much recovered from that.
Have you got an addictive personality?
Without a doubt, I have an addictive personality. You know, I ended up in rehab at 22, right? Because around about 13, I started misbehaving.
That's very young.
Yeah, well, you know, I was always an early adopter of things. Like many people who've been through that, I've had to go on a whole voyage of discovery that has enabled me to kind of get a different perspective on things. I'm very all or nothing. I'm either in or I'm not. So, you know, in terms of physical well-being, there is a fat man dying to get out. I did that whole thing when I turned 50 and it got down to 7%, well, sub 7% body fat. It was actually 6.7%.
Oh, wow. You went under that threshold.
But the problem with that is when you're in your 50s, body or face, you can't have both. So you look phenomenal naked. But when you've got clothes on, people think you're dying because your face is gone.
Oh, so it's like so a drooped.
I kind of, you know, at my lightest, I was about 77 kilos.
That's very, very
and
light.
And I felt phenomenal. It's, you know, that feeling which you will know as a professional athlete.
When you're in peak form.
And you just feel like I could go forever.
Yeah.
You know, I can keep going. It's like I can walk as far as I like. I could run as far as I like. I could cycle as far as I like. I could do anything. Doing that and maintaining a business and a balance with life,
family, it's not attainable,
life,
is it?
You know, because to get there, it was an 8-month transformation and it was 1,500 calories a day, between 10 and 20,000 steps a day, 4 45-minute sessions of cardio a week and 3 heavy lifting sessions a week.
That's a lot.
It's a lot.
And it's how do you fit that in and sustain it, I think is the question. I don't think it is attainable if you are juggling a multitude of pillars. There's a happy medium, and that word balance that everybody speaks about, balance, I think, is being free-flowing.
Yeah.
Because there is no balance. If you were to be perfectly balanced, other elements of your life would fall out of balance, right?
Yeah. For me, it's about I go to the extreme and then I can find the middle.
Have you found the middle?
As with anything, and particularly, I think, for a lot of people in the last 3-4 years and post that rubbish that went on with the world and continues to go on in some aspects is, you know, things got thrown off track.
Yeah.
So consistency is always an issue. So it's like, you know, at the moment, I'm very consistent about how I live in terms of my routine, my morning routine.
What is that routine?
It's quite involved.
Can you tell us?
Yes. Okay. So I wake up at 6:30.
That's in itself very disciplined.
But that's all about what time I go to bed as well, because sleep is so important. I know everyone bangs on about it and you get what can only be described as sleep balls.
Okay.
And look, you know, there is a danger as well that you kind of just become a sort of, at my age, a sort of middle-aged biohacking kind of bore.
It is
and
a bit.
And there's a lot of virtue signalling and sort of rubbish talked about it, but it's about finding out what works for you.
It can be seen as boring, that.
Yeah.
But again, I think that's where, if you can strike the balance, say you're at your best friend's birthday, you actually, maybe you allow yourself to get up at 7:30 and not punish yourself.
Yeah, and it's not persecutory, you know. So I get up in the morning, 6:30. Within 5 minutes, what I do is I get up, I make a coffee.
Yes.
Which I drink black coffee first thing in the morning.
You made me a lovely coffee just there. I did have almond milk in mine there.
Yeah. Then I'm straight in the ice bath.
Oh, wow.
So I get in the ice bath sort of within 5 minutes of waking up, and I do 3 minutes in the ice bath. I keep the ice bath at about 2.5-3 degrees, and then I dunk under for 20 seconds at the end. I then get out and warm up naturally while I'm drinking my coffee. So I sit outside.
Nice.
Regardless of the weather.
Really?
Well, when you get down to
with no clothes on.
Well, I've got some swimming shorts on.
Got your swimmers on.
Don't want to upset anybody.
Okay, of course.
And while I'm doing that, I write my gratitude list.
Nice.
In the morning, because I have to remind myself on a daily basis to be grateful for the pretty fantastic life I've got.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, look, the sort of human condition now, as I think, as a result of social media and, you know, all that sort of thing, is to be dissatisfied or to want more.
Yeah, there's definitely a moving trend towards that. I think even in conversation, I find so many people go, so what's next? Yeah. How about...
what's right now?
What's now?
Yeah.
Everybody's chasing the future, and that means people are in a state of forever, never present, which is a bad place to be.
Well, I think the issue that we all have, and certainly me, is... We're going to go this way now.
Okay, a little to the right.
The issue we all have, I think, is that we have what I describe as your inner see you next Tuesday.
Yes, right? Yes.
Which never tells you the truth about yourself.
Okay. Ever.
And it's constantly wittering on to you. Yeah. So, you know, for example, when I get up at 6:30 and I go and do that first sort of 20 minutes of my morning, there is one side of me going, what on earth are you doing?
Yeah.
Why are you doing this, you man?
Yeah.
You don't need to do this.
Yeah, I've been there.
And, you know, then over time, I've added more to it. So, you know, I started off putting myself in ice cold water and then sort of listened to people talk about gratitude lists and, you know, was derisory about them, to be honest. It's like, you know, what do you want to do that for?
Yeah.
You know, it's a bit woo-woo. All of that.
What would you say to someone that thinks it's a bit woo-woo?
Well, in the words of Socrates, I am a wise man because I know nothing. Right, and that whole thing of like, have you done it? Well, no. So why are you scoffing at it?
Yeah.
You don't, true. You know, it's, you know, basically, you know, walk a mile in my shoes and then judge me, you know, or whatever it is.
Yeah.
We're so quick to judge. We're so quick to scoff. And, you know, I then find myself sort of as a result of kind of doing that part of my morning practice that I start looking a bit more at the kind of spiritual side of things and the spiritual path and what that is about. Now, look, I was raised as an Irish Catholic, right?
Right.
So I have a healthy disdain for any structured religion as a result of it, because all it reminds me of is being dragged to church on a Sunday morning, sitting at the back with the organist's family.
Going, why am I here?
Yeah, and thinking, why am I here? And only really the lore of the sweet shop afterwards, the next day. You know, it's like, if you come to church, we can go and get a quarter pound of bonbons afterwards.
Yeah, 25p. Yeah. That's a decent amount there as well.
But, you know, it's... Do you know what? This bloke with the camera, I'm not sure we should follow him because he's led us up a very strange path. Yeah. I don't know where you're going.
I thought this was your walk, Mark. Right, so we're at the back of church.
We're at the back of church. You know, it was a kind of strange sort of two-sided thing at home. We had, growing up, mum who's religious and a believer, and dad who was... a little bit more, I think, at best, pragmatic about the subject. So, you know, and you get to sort of, you know, 13 or so.
Yeah.
And, you know, you start doing what I was doing at 13 and you think it's all rubbish and I don't want anything to do with it. Fast forward 35 odd years, there's got to be something in it somewhere. It's like somebody said something to me that made so much sense on the subject. Really simple statement. What is the opposite of faith? Certainty.
Ah, okay.
Right. We all try to live in certainty. It's like, if I just do this, I do that. So you
know, and this will fall into place.
It's a fallacy. What you've got to do is kind of get up, try your best, and be okay with the outcome regardless.
Yeah.
Because you ain't driving the bus. We all think we're driving the bus and we're not. It's hard work imagining that you are or trying. You know, I always liken it to that. You ever seen that Tom Cruise movie, The Minority Report? Moving things round on an imaginary screen, trying to make sense of what's going on.
Yeah.
And it's quite steep, this bit.
It's very steep.
And he can't get it. It doesn't work out for him. And that's what life's like. You can sit there going, I make this move, I make that move. And it's like, oh. That didn't work out.
You can aim for it, right? Yeah. And there's nothing wrong with having goals to work towards. But at the same time, it's not necessarily that linear. And it's about how we adapt and move around the obstacles to drive the bus in the right direction.
Exactly. Or not drive the bus, just be a passenger.
Oh, yeah, we're being a passenger now.
We'll just be a passenger.
I reckon I'm driving, Mark. No?
You might be under an illusion there, I'm afraid. But I, look, it's whatever works for you as well. It's that whole thing of, like, somebody comes up to you and goes, I'm really focusing on opening and closing the right chakras for me right now. And you go, yeah, all right. Now, that works for them.
Yeah.
It might be utter rubbish. It might not be. You don't know. You haven't investigated it. So I suppose it's that thing of, as I get a bit older, my main thing is, let's be the unacceptable face of middle age.
Okay.
In other words, I'm not going to get stuck in my ways. I'm not going to become convinced of my own correctness. Because you meet a lot of people.
When
you
say stuck in your own ways, though, could doing your routine every single day be you being stuck in your ways?
Yes,
will you?
You could definitively argue that. But
could
that,
you that forge is, that anywhere else, or that gives you that place of peace?
That gives me that place of peace, and therefore I'm not closed to anything that's going on. Because the other thing that was recommended to me was a book called The Untethered Soul.
Oh yes.
By a man called Michael Singer.
I've heard of this.
And what it does is give a really pragmatic view of what spirituality is. You can take or leave whatever you like out of it. That's the thing. It's like, it's yours. It's not anybody else's. And that's why I don't necessarily buy on structured religion, because like, no, you have to do it this way. And if you don't do it that way, it's a sin. And if you've done that, you're bad. Going back to what you were saying about, you know, suddenly it all becomes persecutory rather than enjoyable.
Yeah. It's interesting how the flip can switch. So something that can give you so much can also zap your soul. It's like, oh, I've committed to it. I have to do it.
Yeah.
And that's where discipline comes in. And sometimes that discipline is required to do that one thing each morning. For me personally, again, I find the morning the best place to practice physical movement, which makes me feel good and sets me up for the day. And everybody's different in what they need. That also comes along with at least two coffees.
Mm-hmm.
But occasionally, it's about accepting that maybe one day you can't do it. Because I think there's a lot of people now that are going around and they're living their lives so religiously by a routine, they don't know how to step off that.
Yeah, well, there is that. But, you know, it's the balance between retaining some kind of agency in your life.
Yeah.
And surrendering to kind of the unknown factors, which if you imagine you can control them, will just set you on a path to consistent disappointment.
Yeah, very
but,
true.
But, you know, that thing of, at some level, discipline is freedom.
Yes. And that's a beautiful sight.
That has proper kind of, for me personally, is a proper anchor point. It's like, look, I do this so that I can do all the other stuff that I need to do.
So as somebody who's grown up around food.
Yeah.
You spent many years as a chef yourself.
I did.
And now run one of the most successful pizzerias in London. How do you find that balance and relationship with food? Because I can imagine you've spoken about your weight loss and addictive personality. The two kind of don't go hand in hand, food addiction and wellness.
No.
Were you food obsessed?
Well, I mean, I think at points where I've been through low points in my life or, you know, struggled with my mental health at various points, you know, I've suffered with depression in one way, shape or form since I was about 14.
Wow.
And I think, you know, first of all, I found drinking drugs, dealt with that.
Yeah, boxed that off, job done, moved on from that.
Then it was working, then it was food, then it, you know, it was always looking for the thing that sort of managed the feelings.
Yeah.
You know, so if you sit me down with a pack of hobnobs, I'll finish them. You know, it's like, I don't know when I'm full. So the easiest way I've found of living with it is I basically eat one meal a day. So until about 6, 7 o'clock, I drink water, black coffee, and the occasional Coke Zero. And then for that one meal a day, I eat what the hell I like.
Nice.
And the amount, whatever amount I like.
And that seems to work for you.
It does. Because essentially, I'm in a fasting state for sort of 20 hours a day.
And how long have you been doing that for?
Rigorously, without a sense of persecution. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, if a lunch presents itself, that's when I'll eat. If a dinner presents itself, that's when I'll eat.
Yeah, got you.
And every so often, if, you know, you go somewhere nice, you go and stay, I'll have three meals in a day.
Okay, got you. Yeah. Again, nice. Balanced relationship with...
Exactly. But on the whole, I've been doing that for about a year now. And it works. I sit at a weight that I'm comfortable with without weighing myself. You know, I go on what fits and what doesn't.
Yeah.
And nowadays everything fits.
That's got to be a good feeling.
Yeah. Because there's been times when, you know, I mean, at my heaviest, I was 23 stone. I mean, you needed a bicycle to get on the good side. You know?
But so you lost around 30 kilos.
When I did the whole sort of transformation thing that I did with Ultimate Performance Gyms.
Yeah. Get that little plug in there.
Well, you know, they did a good job by me. I mean, the simple fact is I trained with them three times a week for 8 months. Didn't have a single injury.
And wow.
I went from being able to sort of deadlift 50, 60 kilos to being able to deadlift 200.
That's phenomenal.
Went from being able to hack squat about 100 kilos to 500, never got injured because they're very precise with their training.
That's a superhuman improvement.
We'll go that way.
We're going towards the left.
Yeah.
So going back to the fasting.
Yeah.
And living that certain type of lifestyle.
Go this side. You can walk in the mud over there. We'll go this way.
Did you ever struggle with social and peer pressure? Because I think that's a really interesting one.
I've always found, being the type of person that I am, you spend a lot of your life concerned about what people think of you.
Yeah.
Right? To use the cliche, you then work out, actually, what they think of me, none of my business.
And it doesn't really matter. That's their business, isn't it?
And it is one of the pleasures of getting a bit older, is you kind of don't care anymore.
Yeah, fine.
But,
I think that,
you know, my inner critic is way harsher than anybody else's. Having been various sizes over the years, I definitely have delved into the area of body dysmorphia.
That's an interesting one to vocalise.
Well, I think it's that thing of, you know...
It's quite an unspoken...
Well, I think, you know, my generation was the first sort of generation where health and fitness became a universal thing. You know, the generation before I started jogging and doing Jane Fonda videos and that kind of thing.
In the leotards.
You know, and gym chains sprang up and, you know, Men's Health magazine started and you were told how to get abs in 6 weeks and all that kind of thing. And what they don't tell you is you get abs by not eating very much and you can do all the sit-ups you like.
But it's not going to do
it. But if you've covered it in a layer of fat, nobody's going to see it.
Yeah.
I just say, under this increasing layer of fat is an extraordinary physique. And
you're like, yes, have you seen it? Let me take my gloves off.
Yeah. And it is, if you want to get that kind of ripped look, it's 80% diet.
So when you say to someone, sorry, I'm not going to join you for this meal, say at a meeting or a lunch, because you're fasting till whatever time it may be that suits you that day, people probably go, well, that's not good for you, or what are you doing that for? You look fine. What do you say to them?
I navigate it in a more sort of simplistic way, which is like they're saying, I'd like to meet you for something to eat then. That's when I'll eat that day.
Ah, very clever.
You know,
yeah.
And I won't eat later. If I do get hungry later, I'll just have something really simple.
Nice.
For me, really, my weakness, my Achilles heel with food is chocolate and ice cream. And I can eat that until I'm probably sick.
Until England win the World Cup.
No, I mean, no, exactly. But my family think it's really fun to buy me one of those Dairy Milk kilo bars.
Oh, that's actually not fair.
Yeah.
Because they're tugging on your heel.
Yeah, yeah. I am the only one in the family that's ever had a six pack, so they want to take you off take you off your pedestal.
Exactly, knock you right off. That's what people do. When it comes to going out to eat and food in general, you must be quite the critique.
I think, you know, I always say, like with the team at Home Slice, it's like you find your standard and you stick to it. So if you're saying your standard's here,
yeah,
you better make sure it's there. What's the most successful restaurant in the world?
McDonald's.
Exactly, because you get the same
everywhere.
Crap cardboard burger wherever you go in the world.
Yeah,
people don't like change.
Talk to me about Home Slice, because that originated from a street food stall stand.
Street
and
food
now
thing.
We have multiple shops.
Yeah, we do.
And you're juggling.
We lost three as a result of COVID and all that aftermath.
Yeah.
You know, the last 4 years of running it have not been a lot of fun. We're sort of turning a corner now as we wade our way through debt and all that kind of stuff, coming out the other side now. But the whole ethos with that from the very beginning was about taking a ubiquitous thing like a pizza that we all thought we knew,
yeah,
and just injecting some culinary integrity into it,
okay,
using the best quality ingredients. Because I'm not Italian, I'm not held to any rules as to what should go on a pizza.
Go on, so.
Well, if you start with a margarita, right?
Yeah.
Because if you can't make a good margarita,
then go home.
You shouldn't be making pizza.
Okay. And what's the key to your secret success?
Good quality ingredients. And really, if all the ingredients will go together on a spoon, they'll work on a pizza. So if it'll go together as a spoonful.
Yeah.
And it works on a pizza because the base is just a vehicle for flavour.
Interesting.
But the base has to be good.
What's
and
in your base?
And you should only cook them in flour, water, salt and yeast, what should be in pizza.
However,
not sugar, not, you know, all that kind of, like, good quality flour. We do a 36 hour in fridge proof on the dough.
So any longer than that, you're getting rid of it? Or
no,
what do you mean?
Any shorter than that, we don't use it.
Ah, okay, got you.
I mean, it can go a little bit longer. It's sort of, you know, there's a sort of then a, maybe a sort of 10-12 hour window beyond that where it's still usable, but because it's a living thing, and that can be atmospheric, it could be down to whether the walk-in fridge is working efficiently or all sorts of things, you know, the dough is slightly different in every restaurant because we make it fresh in every restaurant every day.
What's your favorite pizza?
What I tend to eat the most of is the margarita, because there's nothing to hide. So I'll know if the guys are doing a good job by whether the tomato sauce is properly seasoned, whether the dough is right, you know, whether they're putting exactly what should be the amounts on the pizza. You know where you stand with it.
And how many slices of pizza do you reckon you have a week?
Three or four.
Mellow. That's nice.
Well, I mean, it's easier now. I've only got three restaurants.
It used to be
six or seven because I had more restaurants.
Six or seven slices all whilst trying to
I mean, don't get me wrong. Occasionally, I like to go in and smash a whole one of one of the, you know. And I can eat, I've had a lot of practice, but I can eat a whole one of our pizzas because our pizzas are 20 in.
I reckon we should go and have a pizza off, you know. I'd take down
well,
a margarita.
You know, would you be on for the margarita challenge?
What's the margarita challenge?
Can you eat a whole one in less than 5 minutes? Because if you can, we'll give it to you for free.
I reckon I could do that.
Now,
that's not going to be a good look, though.
It's funny you say that. We used to have it as a kind of little thing on social media. People would come in and try it. It's ended up in people's hair and blah, blah, blah.
Oh,
and then this guy came in one day into our city branch, which is in the Bloomberg building near Cannon Street. And he cut the pizza into three lengths, rolled it up, and swallowed it like an anaconda. It was one of the most revolting things I've ever seen.
Oh.
So we kind of stopped doing it after that.
Okay, yeah, smart, cool. Well, maybe I'll come in and just try and eat the whole thing rather than race it, because I guess it would ruin the experience.
It does, you know. Take your time.
I'm happy to pay for it.
But the thing is, we have a made by hand, eat by hand principle.
Yeah.
Which, because I believe pizza should be eaten by hand, not with a knife and fork.
Yeah, it's a bit odd that, isn't it?
Well, some people bring in cutlery from Pret, and we'll ignore that. But we don't have any knives or forks in the building. You do tend to eat quicker if you eat with your hands.
There is an element of when you slow down and enjoy your food, it does.
Well, I did that years ago when I was pushing maximum density. One of the things I tried to lose weight with was I went off to the Meyer Clinic in Austria. They give you these dry bread rolls every day and you've got to chew each mouthful, so about 100 times or something.
Yeah, that sounds pretty rough.
You know, I mean, they do say that, you know, was it Kellogg, wasn't it? You know,
yeah.
Chew 32 times because it informs your stomach that food is on the way.
32 times?
Yeah. But have you ever counted how many times you chew your food?
Depends what you're eating, doesn't it?
Most people, about five chews. Bite it, one, two, three, four, five,
boom.
Swallow.
Down the hole.
I mean, sounds gross when you say it like that. I'm a quick eater.
It's probably because you're starving by 7 o'clock.
By 7 o'clock, I'm so hungry. I just need to inhale it like a Hoover. As a family, we're quick eaters.
When it comes to your routine, we delved into the morning routine.
Mm-hmm.
You're driving into London three, four times a week.
Yep.
Where are you fitting in the gym, the training, and how important is that now?
So
you've found this
at home
spiritual peace.
I've got the setup at home, which I'm lucky enough to have the room for. So I have a VersaClimber there.
Yeah.
Which I think personally is the single hardest piece of cardio equipment you can use.
I think it is a horrendous bit of kit that.
Yeah.
That is hard.
But I got into it with that gym BXR.
And they do the
VersaClimber classes.
Yeah.
Which is like a spin class, but on VersaClimbers.
I've done that once.
Yeah.
Once is the word.
I became mildly obsessed with that, which will come as no surprise given what I've talked about, how my brain works. I was doing those classes three times a week and I got to the point where I could sort of do a vertical mile in about 23 minutes, which, you know, for an old bloke's pretty good. I mean, there's younger people who can do it much quicker. It's brutal.
Right, so we're on the VersaClimber.
So, VersaClimber, but all I do now, I just do 20 minutes every morning of something.
Job done.
Yeah.
Little and often. It's not a punishment is it?
Exactly, just 20 minutes of something. So, 20 minutes on the VersaClimber, 20 minutes of deadlifts, next day, 20 minutes of arms, next day, 20 minutes chest, and just
get the steps in.
Or it might be just 20 minutes of stretching.
Nice. I like it. It's holistic.
I'd quite like an app.
Oh, yeah.
So you follow along. Bend app.
Okay.
Because the other thing is, as you get older, you want to be a bit more bendy.
Have you tried hot yoga?
No, I've never tried hot yoga. There's something in me that feels it might be unhygienic.
Okay, I've got a deal. You take me for a pizza.
Yeah.
And I'm going to drag you and your wife along to hot yoga, because I was just chatting to her.
She's all about yoga and all that kind of thing.
She said she needs a bit of yoga in her life.
She's really annoying because she claims I'm so unfit, right?
Yeah.
But she spent years as a professional dancer, right? So has, in the same way that you do, has that muscle memory. So she might not do something for about 6 weeks. And then annoyingly, she's back in shape in a week.
How do you find that on
really
the other
annoying.
Side of it?
I have to try very hard. I am of a build that if I walk past a potato, I potentially put on a kilo. And I'll lose my cardio and it'll take me a month to get it back.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's tough going then.
I mean, it doesn't help that I don't tell people this, I still smoke.
Okay, we'll keep that bit quiet. You've got to have one vice, right?
Well, no, I've got to the point where that has to stop.
Why don't we name, this is a good little challenge.
Go on then.
Three things that we don't like about smoking. I'll give you one to help you.
Go on.
They stink.
Yeah, there is that. Absolutely. They're expensive.
Two.
And they kill you.
Three.
I mean, that's a pretty good reason to stop almost anything, isn't it?
Maybe this is it. Do you reckon?
Well, you know what I've said? It's like, you know, since all of the kind of rubbish of 2020 and everything, and everything that came off the back of that.
Yeah.
Which is when I started smoking again.
Okay, fair.
just feel like we're coming out of it now.
We're on the way out.
So now's the time to stop.
Okay.
You know.
That's cool that we've marked it.
You know, we've been...
It's logged, both audio and video.
To a certain degree, I think everybody has felt in a state of limbo or existing.
Yes.
And it's now time for all of us, new government, like them or loathe them or whatever it is.
Yeah.
You know, didn't win the Euros. Should we just start living now?
Should we move on?
Should we move on, everybody?
Yeah, okay.
Because I think a lot of people got caught in a sort of state of stasis.
A little bit static,
yeah,
is how I would describe it.
And weirdly, during that whole, all those lockdowns, I stayed really rigorous about the exercise and all that kind of thing. And it was afterwards when we sort of came out of it and you realised it was sort of 22 when you went, oh, this isn't getting any easier. This is hard work.
It's still going on,
right? It's still going on. The effects are still here. We, you know, economy hasn't bounced back. People are kind of a bit miserable still. And it sort of rubbed off on us all because you can't help but get affected by your surroundings.
What would you say to somebody approaching their mid-50s, male or female, that wants to make these positive changes physically and mentally? How would you encourage that?
I think it is like in so many aspects in life, it works if you work it. If you are not taking responsibility for your own well-being, you can only expect to feel rubbish.
It is a responsibility, isn't it?
But it is that thing of like, what I've had to learn with it is stop approaching it from the extremes. So it's like, I don't have to change everything today. That thing of like, right, I'm gonna go to JD Sports or Nike Town or wherever, I'm gonna buy loads of new kit and I'm gonna work out every day. And you get a week in, you ache all over, you feel terrible.
And you can't do it anymore.
And you stop. So I would say, if you are quite sedentary, and you're carrying, you know, a few kilos too many, start walking.
Yeah, strong. That's good advice.
Start walking, and you can, the other thing is you can take your mind off it with a half-decent podcast like this one, or Spooning with Mark Wogan.
Yes, we love Spooning. We love the mile.
Or even a walking meditation of some sort.
This is really off-piste.
Yeah, yeah.
Mark.
No, sorry about that.
It's
not quite, you know, yomping wear you've got on. It's very stylish, but...
This is my kind of yomping wear.
Yeah. Oh. We're out in the woods proper.
We are. I like it. We are embracing nature on every level.
Is, if you do live near somewhere like this, or it's in within a driving distance, go and do your walking there.
Yeah, as opposed to off the M4, where I often do it. Here we go. This is actually a challenging walk. There you go. Even when you're walking, you can challenge yourself.
Exactly.
Mentally as well as physically, because you've got to have your brain switched on.
You do.
You don't stack.
You've got to climb under little bushes to get out onto the path again.
Tell our listeners a little bit about Spooning, because I am fortunate enough to be joining you for a Spooning session soon.
When are you looking forward to it?
I'm really excited.
Good. Because a lot of people get scared by it.
Oh, no, I'm not scared. It's funny, though, because Spooning, I'm thinking initially, when you told me it was called Spooning, I was like, oh, that's like spooning in bed.
Yeah, we meet up, have a little cuddle.
And then the end.
And talk. No, it's not that. It is based on the fact that I believe there's no such thing as a bad ingredient. Right. So lots of people have things, you know, oh, I don't like peas or I never eat fish.
I don't like shellfish. I didn't tell you that.
That's going to make tomorrow awkward. But anyway, no, I'm not telling you. Stop trying to get out of me what you're going to get fed. So no such thing as a bad ingredient. It's either been cooked for you badly. So outside of a religious belief or an allergy or in some cases a phobia.
Yeah.
What we try and do is change your opinion on ingredients. So before the guest comes on, as you know, you answer a little questionnaire, food loves, food hates, guilty pleasures, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
We build a little menu and we work towards two spoons. One is of something you say you love and the other one is something you say you don't necessarily hold in that high regard. And I blindfold you and feed it to you. Because when you remove sight from the equation, you remove an enormous amount of perception.
That's the same with many things.
Yeah.
People, relationships.
Yeah. We've got about an 85% strike rate on changing people's opinion.
No way.
And we've had a number of people who spat stuff out. And, you know, it'll be interesting to see if how it goes with you.
Change perception.
But most of it is, in many cases, related to childhood. You know, stuff you were fed at school.
What you grew up on.
Yeah, the fact that your parents might have been filthy cooks. You know, I was lucky. My mum's an incredible cook. So I grew up around fantastic food. We all love food as a family.
Do you think that stemmed your addictive relationship?
No, I think that's just how I'm wired. I'm all or nothing.
I'm kind of a bit like that as well.
And, well, no, I mean, I've seen videos of you, you're a raving lunatic. But
that's again, I wouldn't do... but again, that's a visual perception.
Yeah.
When you actually get to know me, it's all very risk assessed and very calculated.
Well, also, the other thing is, you're confident in your physical ability to do stuff.
Or I wouldn't do it. I'd run a mile. If I'm scared of something, that includes food.
But
good luck.
But the whole point is that the majority of what we're scared of is a preconception, not based on experience. Very rare is the litany of fears that we have based on experience. In some cases, is, you know, when I was a younger man, I loved doing dangerous things. I liked riding motorcycles. I liked, you know, skiing very fast. I liked playing rugby. I liked, you know, doing dangerous stuff. You know, skied off the top of a mountain on a hang glider, of, you know, all sorts of stupid stuff. And then I got to about 35 and I sort of got a sense of my own mortality. And I developed vertigo for the first time.
No way.
Yeah, and it was on...
At the age of 35?
Yeah, and it was on a Ferris wheel with Susan, and it suddenly hit. I looked up and I saw a split pin holding the bucket that we were in. And I just went. And obviously, Susan thought it was the funniest thing she'd ever seen, as I'm literally head between my knees going, get me off this thing, get me... And ever since then, and I've, you know, and I've tried to combat it and stuff like that, and, you know... I now can go up a ladder.
Right. Wow, so that hit you pretty hard.
Yeah, no. I mean, utter kind of fear out of nowhere. I mean, it happened to a couple of mates of mine. I remember being skiing with a mate of mine, getting off a chairlift and literally throwing himself on the ground, unable to get up. You need to get me off this mountain. You need to get me off this mountain.
How did you get him down? Did you give him a piggyback?
No, we literally kind of held him between the two of us.
No way.
And carried him back to the chairlift and sent him down again.
See, I've not quite experienced that yet, but I've definitely found a place of fear. And anyone that listens to this podcast regularly will know that. And that's why I stopped my snowboarding. So I think it's, for me, it was like an element of just recognising my boundaries and being okay with... where I was at and just leaving it in the past. Do you seek that thrill or adventure in any capacity now? How do you get that high? Is it the ice bath every morning?
I think it's the ice bath, but it's also kind of tuning yourself into more simple pleasures.
Yeah.
And noticing what's around you, like this.
This is magical, isn't it?
Getting up in the morning, sitting outside, listening to the birds. Whatever it is, you know, all the kind of stuff that I thought, you know, as a younger man was a waste of time, stupid, and a bit weak.
Because I think a bit woo-woo again.
Well, I think the other thing as well is, which I worry about for future generations is, you know, generation before me and my generation, we had a very, very sort of twisted messaging as to what it was to be a man.
You know,
all that sort of, it was the sort of hangover of the stiff upper lip and, you know, keep calm, carry on.
Yeah, you must be strong, you must be bold, you must not cry.
No, we don't talk about feelings. And I think it's really important.
Would you encourage that?
Absolutely. I mean, just locally to here, about a year after I moved in, I started a little men's group and we meet on a Sunday morning.
Amazing.
For an hour, and it started off with about six of us in a room, and it gets up to about 50 men now.
Wow.
And I just, you know, there's a lot of information coming people's way, but not a lot of solution. And you know, when you see stuff on social media about life coaching.
Yeah, there's an abundance of it.
I don't know how to run my life, but I'm sure as hell going to tell you how to run yours. You know, and I'm going to charge you for it. Now, in my experience, the people who really might have some answers for you aren't charging for it.
Interesting. You know,
those people who are willing to take the time, sit down, have a conversation, listen, offer a suggestion, some guidance. Invariably giving it away.
Doing that each Sunday morning must be incredibly fulfilling, because it comes from an intrinsic place of giving a part of yourself.
I believe it's like you can't hold on to what you've got if you ain't willing to give it away. It's like you teaching people how to snowboard.
Yeah.
It's the same thing.
Not even specifically snowboarding though.
No.
I often refer to running, yoga, because it's free,
yeah,
it's accessible, and anybody can do it, and it can change your life. I could share how it's done that for me, and something as simple as that can change somebody's day, somebody's life, somebody's year.
If you're not willing, and not in a virtue signaling, boring, sort of self-gratifying way,
yeah,
but if you're willing to let people know what works for you, you can help someone. But it shouldn't ever be dictatorial or kind of, you know, they're just suggestions. Work out what works for you, but be open-minded to it. Don't be closed down.
Mark, what is your relationship like with Monday, the start of the week?
Well, I've had, last 4 years, we dreaded Mondays.
Oh yeah, why?
Well, because Mondays are always terrible. You have the, whatever had gone wrong in the restaurants over the weekend.
Oh, right.
All piled up. So I tend to work from home on Mondays.
Ah, okay, strong.
Because
why on board the stress?
Yeah, and I can sort of, I can keep a distance from it, assess it, and then go in and try and make a difference Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday.
Strong. And now, we're digging Mondays?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, for me, it's like, it is very much about you're in the moment. If I can, you know, I can't affect to any great certainty anything 3, 4, 5 days ahead.
Yeah.
Because you don't know what's going to happen. You know, if anything, the last 4 years has taught me is you don't know.
You don't know what's going to happen from
you
one day
you
to
do,
the next.
But you don't.
You don't.
You walk out tomorrow, get run over by a bus, or win the postcode lottery. You don't know.
Let's go for the more positive option.
Yes, absolutely.
I'm down for that vibe. That's what's going to happen tomorrow.
Yeah, we're both going to win the postcode lottery. Luckily, we live in different postcodes, so we won't have to share it.
Good, yeah. Good. I'm very glad of that. And lastly, Mark, if you were to leave a life motto or quote that you're currently living by to inspire our listeners to get up and continue to strive, what would that be?
Fall over 7 times, get up 8.
Yes! Love that. Monday Mile listeners, thank you so much for joining us here on the Monday Mile Walk and Talk podcast. You know what to do. Do make sure you subscribe. The audio drops every single Monday morning at 12 a.m. for those early risers. Mark Wogan, thank you so much for sharing.
Lovely little walk today, aren't
it? Your passion, your insight, and also your very personal journey and relationship with food. I'm inspired. Well, I might keep fasting. We must fast away.
Let's go have one decent meal.
Let's do it. My name, our listeners, it's a wrap.